This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, filling in for Terry Gross.
My dear friends, I want you to listen to the chorus of this song, and on the second time around, gather all your friends and neighbors and join in. Let them sing.
There's a light shining bright in a little cabin window down Virginia way. And they say every night when the night shadows fall, Mother's light through the night seemed to call to her wandering son. When his wandering is done, please come home to stay. For a light still burns in a little cabin window down Virginia way. Down Virginia way. Somewhere there's a mother.
That is, of course, Tiny Tim. Most people who remember Tiny Tim write him off as an eccentric one-hit wonder. The hit was Tiptoe Through the Tulips, which he warbled in his falsetto voice, accompanying himself on the ukulele. But he had a great passion and knowledge about the music of earlier eras. Radio host Barry Hanson, otherwise known as Dr. Demento, was a champion of Tiny Tim. He wrote, "How ironic that Tiny Tim should be a one-hit wonder, seeing he was really a man of 1,000 songs. Make that 10,000. He had an encyclopedic knowledge of American popular music from the 1880s to the 1950s, and could sing most anything you asked for right on the spot, with a perfect feel for the song, the era it came from, and the singers who sang it back then." That's from an essay included in the new box set, God Bless Tiny Tim, featuring the three albums Tiny Tim recorded for Reprise Records in the late 60s. It's just been released in a limited edition by Rhino Records. Tiny Tim died on stage of heart failure in 1996. He was 64 years old. Just a few months before his death, he recorded this interview and performance on Fresh Air.
Tiny Tim, welcome to Fresh Air.
Good afternoon, Ms. Terry Gross. It's glad to speak to you and your wonderful show.
Now, let me play a song from the new CD that's more in your period. More, I guess this is a turn-of-the-century song. And it's called Sly Cigarette. Tell me about the song, how you found it.
That was my darling wife and Sue's favorite. The song was sung in 1898 by S.H. Dudley, one of the great cylinder stars of his day. I got this in a collection of cassette tapes from Mr. Dulo, a great historian who passed away a few years ago in Florida. And I thought the song was another great melody, and also a message song. Even though it was 1898, it was a shock to see a woman smoking.
Let's hear Sly Cigarette, and this is Tiny Tim from his new album, Girl.
Oh, you poor little cigarette, how they're stomping and crushing you today. They're taking advantage of your small little nature. They're blaming you for cancer when you can still get cholesterol from butter and fat from lard and bacon and all these meats and cheeses that are causing heart attacks and tumors. Why are they picking on you, oh sly cigarette? It's not fair. Somebody has to protest and get back to normality again. Oh, sly cigarette. Oh, fine cigarette. Why did you teach me to love you so when I have to pretend that I don't, you know? Oh, sly cigarette. Yes. Oh, fine cigarette. What is it? Why did you teach me to love you so when I have to pretend that I don't, you know?
And my guest is Tiny Tim. So tell me, do you sing in a falsetto anymore?
Yes, right now, it's in the afternoon. This needs a lot of warm-up. I'll just see if I can even do a poor version of... Oh, tiptoe through the tulips with me.
And how did you discover your falsetto voice?
Well, I thank Jesus Christ for every gift, because I really prayed about it one day. And about 1952, I needed something to differentiate myself from better singers at the time, especially from Tony Bennett, Perry Como, Guy Mitchell. And so every entertainer, every artist, every comedian, every broadcaster should have a sound, an originality in the voice that the mass can identify with singly. And so originality is the key to success. You can close your eyes and know it's Louis Armstrong, know it's Bing Crosby, and the same thing, you know, it's Tiny Tim if I do tiptoe, whatever. And so that's what I looked for, that's what I got, and from 54 on, it proved to be successful.
Now, back in the 50s, before you were famous, how did you dress when you performed?
Well, another good question. Well, I had a usual shirt and tie and suit jacket. I didn't start wearing costumes until, 68, 69, and Mr. Sharp in Australia made me unbelievable costumes after that. But when you went to amateur nights, you always had a suit and tie on.
Short hair?
Yeah, until 54. Then everything changed. Not only did the hair become long, which I took a little bit from Rudolph Valentino. Mr. Valentino, in his book that he wrote in 1923, and he had his hair parted one way over the eyebrow. I wanted mine the other way. And the only difference is that why long hair was here since day one, the difference here is that I had white-faced makeup with it throughout the day, not just for show business. And the white-faced, whatever Jolson did to blackface, it happened here with white-face. And the long hair. So that in 1954 and 55 and 56, in the years that President Eisenhower was here and the McCarthy hearings were ending, I mean, that was a rough thing to look at 24 hours a day.
You said you were wearing the white makeup not just for show business.
That's right.
What were the other reasons?
Another good question, Ms. Gross. First of all, since I was not good looking and I didn't want to cut this nose off, I was afraid of operations. I've always wanted to appeal to certain type of women I liked. Everyone has their dreams of what they want. And, of course, the hair was too short. So when I wore the makeup, I should also state that I still cleanse today about 8 to 12 times a day and use night creams and eye creams and throat creams and, of course, light makeup. But at that time, I wanted to also appeal to the women. Even if they said, oh, I can't stand them, look at that ugly thing in the subway trains, at least they were paying attention. So part of it was for show business, and part of it was to live within myself and be content. And it started to work on both fronts. On the amateur nights, I was starting to win under Larry Love in the 50s, and in the subway trains around the neighborhood, they were all looking. And the high voice also became, believe it or not, appealing to especially the girls who listened to me. Whether it was funny or grotesque, it still was appealing. At least they paid attention. And so that's the difference.
Excuse this cheap bit of psychoanalysis.
Go right ahead.
But it seems to me, in a way, what you're saying is that you felt unattractive, you felt like a freak, and so to transcend that, you kind of turned yourself into a freak by putting on makeup and growing your hair long.
Well, I was unattractive. I didn't think I was. I was a very ugly person when it came to looks.
Mm-hmm.
They looked at it as a freak, you know, with the white makeup. And mm-hmm. The world looked mm-hmm. at it that way. The world looked at the hair like that, and especially in the 50s, the middle 50s. But inside one's heart, I felt that I was especially wearing white makeup, not dark makeup, because white seemed, I've always looked at the princesses that I adored in my dreams to be equal with the white light, beautiful springtime. And I wanted to feel within me, with the songs and everything, that I had a sensuality with the women I liked. I don't know if I can explain it that way. And by wearing this light makeup, I felt even with myself by keeping clean. I've always looked at women as clean objects who wash their hands all the time with soap, who take care of their bodies and never offend.
So the white makeup gave you a sense of purity and cleanliness.
Beautifully put, beautifully analyzed, yes.
Do you still wear it?
Well, it's not as white as it is, but it's whitish today.
Your big breakthrough in terms of celebrity was your recording of Tiptoe Through the Tulips.
Yes.
In fact, why don't we hear a little bit of it?
Tiptoe through the window, by the window, that's where I'll become tiptoe.
know, I think in the business you're seen as a novelty act. Is that how you would like to be seen?
Maybe not. But if it's so, fine. Because I wanted to make it. And I prayed, of course, the right way. And if that's the cross I have to bear, fine. In fact, I want to emphasize, in case many articles say, I'm not trying to change by doing this album. I like the songs, whatever's top 10. I have a heavy metal record in Sydney, Australia, with Highway to Hell, which I did in 1993, which never even came out to this country yet. I've done the song because I like the song, Youth Makes All Music. Youth made ragtime in 1910 when they were saying, bring back the old songs then, like I Love You Truly. And youth made jazz in the 20s, right after World War I, and the boogie-woogie in the 40s, you know, and the rock and roll in the 50s after the blacks originally did it. So I'm telling you, so youth makes their own music. So when I see these old-timers say, oh, what disgusting music it is, they haven't heard it. The rap and the beats and the soul are the music of this generation, and one has to be born again into these songs. That when I did Highway to Hell, just a snip of a... I'm on the highway to hell, living easy, living free, season ticket on a one-way ride. No, and that's with a heavy metal band. So definitely one must take and be born again into this new music today. Just, if I may do one more for you.
Oh, please.
Miss Terry? Yeah, this is now we just left Decoration Day. And there was another great song, ironically sung by Henry Burr, for the great veterans who died on Decoration Day, to remember them. In 1917, this great song. At a grand old meeting on Decoration Day, I heard a veteran proudly say, what makes us love this country, land of the brave and free? I'll tell you what, said he, it's liberty. L stands for love of our country, I for independence too, B for the brave men who fought for us, E the emblem dear at white and blue, R for the right that we fight for, T true Americans will be, Y is for you and for your country too, that stands for liberty.
You certainly put your heart and soul into songs when you sing them.
Oh, listen, there are great romantic songs going back, you know, especially from 1848 and Stephen Foster's time to about 45, the great melodies in the gramophone years, so many like that, which I have listened to and which have consoled me in this business. It wasn't the loss of fame or never seeing the cash that got me. It was a broken heart that I've suffered many years over romances due to my excitabilities or my simplicities that were broken up. And I couldn't get them back together again. You're so patient, Miss Terry. Just let me do one more number from that period that I sing many times when I think about some women I've hurt with too much of a hasty argument and I've never seen them again. This was written in 1916 by the late, great Ernest R. Ball and J. Karen Brennan, who wrote When Irish Eyes Are Smiling and Mother McCree. Also sung by Harry McDonough, great star. Just a snip, and thanks for your patience. Turn back the universe and bring me yesterday. Turn back the hands of time that hold life's golden ray. Take back that bitter hour when our love passed away. Turn back the universe and give me yesterday. Many a time I was singing, take back that bitter hour when our love passed away. I have experienced that many times in romances, and I've experienced that in 1985. I was working with the circus then, third-rate circus, Alan C. Hill Circus, going from town to town. And I came to a place in New Jersey where I worked, and or Pennsylvania, and they allowed me a night off to, right after the circus, to go to a new disco opening up in New York called the Palladium. There was a beautiful girl, Miss Lauren, there. She was so much in love with her. She was only 19 years old, and she liked me very much. I'll never forget that great night. But a few years later, about 88 or 89, I had some argument with her, and even though she's had arguments with other people, it was a shock coming out of this mouth, and nothing was the same after that. That's one incident. I wish I could take back that bitter hour when our love passed away. And to all your listeners, it is true. One word, one gesture can break up a romance.
You know, everybody's getting rid of their turntables and putting in CD players instead. I bet you still have a lot of 78s, right?
Not anymore, but I tell you, since you brought this up, I am the only, if I may say, celebrity entertainer who has at least one or two cylinders in the Edison Museum in Bellard, Illinois, since 1977, if it's still there. At that time, I recorded with my late conductor on the piano, Marvin Lewis, two Edison cylinder from the machine. They were nice out there to cut, you know, they shave off the old cylinders for 2 minutes to sing some of the great, one or two great songs of 1904. And this is how I sounded through the cylinder horn.
Nothing to do, Nelly, darling. Nothing to do, you say. Let's take a trip down memory ship back to the bygone days. Back to the old village schoolhouse. Back to the dear days of yore. Let's take a trip down memory ship. Let us go there once more. School days, dear old golden rule days. Reading and writing and arithmetic. Taught to the tune of a hickory stick. You are my queen in calico. I was your bashful barefoot beau. And you wrote on my slate, I love you, Joe, when we were a couple of kids.
Tiny Tim, and what other performer would want to sound like that were really recorded in 1904? And what other performer would know the verse to School Days?
Well, a lot. Well, remember that great song written by Gus Edwards in this country was the biggest cylinder record at its time. And when recorded on the old Columbia 78 at that time, which was only one side, it was worn out. And this whole world went to this great singer, Byron G. Harlan, and the song School Days still plays somewhere today, you know, in some place around the world. I mean, these are great melodies. I call this the white man's soul. I know you heard of the black man's soul with rhythm and blues and ragtime, but this is the white man's soul. These great melodies, like You're a Grand Old Flag, like Yankee Doodle Dandy, School Days, In the Shade of the Old Apple Tree, they moved. They moved the hearts of men, women, and children. It was not the words alone, but the music had a spiritual uplift. And that's what makes popular music, in my opinion, the root of all music.
Tiny Tim, thank you so much for being with us.
Ms. Terry Gross, thanks for being a good listener, and it's a pleasure talking to you and your fresh air fun.
The late Tiny Tim, recorded in 1996. A box set of three albums he recorded in the late 60s has just been released.